Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the North Carolina Legislature in downtown Raleigh, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi, glad to have you along. It is, what is today, Thursday, October 18th, 2018. We are less than 3 weeks away from an election, a midterm, and it's going to be interesting if you haven't been tracking it. Here to tell us what he's tracking and paying attention to is the 74th Governor of North Carolina, Pat McCrory. Welcome to the podcast, Governor.
Oh, thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Have you voted yet?
No, I'll probably vote within the next week. I like to do early voting now that I don't have to vote in front of all the cameras as a past gubernatorial and mayoral candidate for the last 25 years.
Is this what this will be the first election that you're not running in something, running for something since when? 2000? 1998?
Well, I had a gap there in 2000. 9, 10, 11.
Right.
Wasn't running for anything.
Sure, but,
and,
sure.
But it's still odd for me to go to the poll and not be one of the ones handing out brochures or stickers. But in one way, it's much more relaxing now, not having cameras over my head or protesters shouting at me. So there's an advantage to being a regular civilian now at times.
Why early? Why do you like early so much, as opposed to Election Day?
To make sure I don't miss it.
It's reasonable.
It ensures that I get to pick it the day I vote and ensure I don't have a conflict on the election day just in case I'm sick or not traveling that day for business.
Sure. We've heard plenty in the recent 6, 7, 8, 9 months about a potential blue wave or a blue tsunami and this potentially being the year of the woman or the year of the woman voter or the year of the woman candidate. As we head into this thing, how would you size this up, or how would you classify this midterm if you were to put a label on it?
I'd put one word in, and that's contradiction. Contradiction by both Democrats and contradiction by Republicans. On the Democratic side, I see contradiction where the National Party is moving much more to the left, and yet North Carolina politicians are moving much more to the middle, at least from a perception standpoint. In fact, giving a message of much more conservatism and running away from the National Party. On the Republican side, it's very interesting. I'm seeing many people, a contradiction of talking about local and state issues and at times wrapping themselves around the president and at other times avoiding the president at all costs. So a lot of contradiction and a lot of hypocrisy by people running for offices in both the Republican and Democratic elections.
Where are you at with this president right now? Are you an ardent supporter? Are you a tepid backer? Have you distanced yourself from him?
I'm a strong supporter of the policy, but I don't like the name calling. I'm not a big fan of the tweets, although some would say if I'd done tweets like he did, I would be still the 74th governor of North Carolina, where he went around the media. I tried to work through the media, and I failed in that effort. I let the media and the left control my agenda and not allow me to talk about the incredible economic progress that I had as governor, and the media diverted the attention to other things. So maybe I wasn't as smart as Donald Trump in using new technology to bypass the media. So, but I don't like the name calling. That never was my style, and it won't be my style either now or in the future, even when I have my own radio show here in Charlotte. But I do like the policy. I like his foreign policy. I think he's stepping on some of the toes of the bureaucracy. And believe me, I understand the bureaucracy. Being a mayor of 14 years, a governor for 4 years, I learned and saw firsthand how the bureaucracy can stifle moving and changing things that have to be changed.
You mentioned the word contradiction off the top, and I don't think it's necessarily a contradiction, but you talk about, the president's name calling and that it's certainly not your style. At the same time, it has been in some ways effective for him. Do you regret not having gone further down that path?
No, I can't regret it, because you can't pretend to be someone you aren't. The president comes across that way. Everyone knows his style. He hasn't varied from it all his life. If I would have done that, it would have been a complete contradiction of my personal relationships that I have with individuals and my relationship that I had with the general public. And on the left side, the other thing I hate seeing, and that I might have been the test for this even prior to Trump, was the types of protesters that get in your face and yell shame, 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 and almost bully elected officials in restaurants and on the street and outside your homes. And I had that during my entire 4 years as governor. I'm glad to see Governor Cooper not having to face right-wing protesters, where left-wing protesters really made life very difficult on me and my family during my 4 years of office. And I don't like that turn in politics by the left of, you know, interfering with people's meals, stopping them on the street, cussing them out, and yelling shame, which I still occasionally get even though I'm out of office, which is, I don't think, is the way we ought to have civil government today.
I suspect that you think that is, or I mean, I heard it just in your answer that you think this is much more of an action, a movement, an unacceptable civil discourse, civil response. Civil probably should be removed from my question. What's the breakdown to you? I mean, is it really just the left that does that? Is it 80-20 from your perspective, left versus right?
I'd say it's probably 80-20, but the right did it with some of the Tea Party activities, which most people don't realize was paid for. And most of the protests on the left are paid for and well-coordinated through PR campaigns, through law firms, through activist groups that are sitting on large pots of money. These protests don't happen by accident. They're well-coordinated, and they're well-coordinated with the media also. And most of that coordination right now is occurring on the left, not the right. And that was my case during my 4 years as governor. From day one, there were protesters outside of the executive mansion in Raleigh. And I recognize some of the people that used to protest against me. I now recognize them even in D.C., and I recognize some of the groups involved. So I think one area where the media is failing on both the left and the right is letting the public know who is coordinating much of this uncivil interaction and where the money is coming from. The media should tell the public where it's coming from and how well coordinated and paid for it is, and the public's not getting that information.
One thing I think that most people on the right and the left will agree is that we are the partisanship, the bickering, it's just heightened. It's just increased. The divide between the two parties is deeper. Now, I think some of that is legitimate and real, and I think some of it, I think it has to do with the candidates. I think it has to do with a number of factors. What I'm trying to spit out here, and I've asked other people this on the podcast before, you're in a different situation than a Tim Moore or a Dan Blue or a Dan Bishop who hails from your district or Senator Berger, of course, because you ran for a statewide office, which I think lends itself to having to run a little bit closer to the center, because you don't, and I won't use the word gerrymander, but you don't have a district that's cultivated for your party, right? So as we think about where we're at right now, how do we realistically, feasibly, and maybe it's not realistic or feasible, how do we begin to get back to the center? Is there any way to do that?
Well, I tried to figure out that in my 4 years, because I was branded as a right-wing extremist, which is the farthest thing I was, basically on one or two issues. And it was an inaccurate brand that was given to me. But once the brand is given, you're stuck with it. And this is the effectiveness of the paid left-wing protest movement, which will target an individual and brand them. And to get away from that brand is very, very difficult. And I had a group come up to me during some of the controversial issues that I had to deal with, which I really wasn't interested in. They told me flat out in the governor's office, we are going to brand you. We are going to eviscerate you. We are going to protest against you. And you have no idea what's about to hit you. I mean, they told me that to my face, and that was the in-your-face politics that I then saw for the next 3.5 years. So I never figured out a way to fight it, because I'm, for people who know me, I'm a pretty cordial individual, and I don't like the in-your-face confrontations mm-hmm. that we're seeing on both sides. A lot of it's driven by cable TV
yeah.
and ratings, where people like to watch a car wreck, and the producers and the advertisers know that more people will watch a car wreck, even though they deny they like it. They actually do enjoy it because the ratings show that. And the media likes protesters. The media likes yelling and screaming and signs and even violence, because it draws clicks and it draws the TV audience. And that's a sad commentary on all of us.
Not all the media. I do not like violence. I don't like a lot of what you just mentioned, just for the record. But we're a nonprofit public radio station, so perhaps we. I know.
I'm the cable network.
I know you are. I know you are.
On both the left and the right are involved in this, and we're all guilty of participating in somewhat and watching it.
Quick follow up.
It skews the subjects that really need to be discussed: the complexities of healthcare, the complexities of our budget, the complexities of the criminal justice system. We're missing out on the civil discourse on the real complex issues that will impact generations to come.
Quick follow-up, not to go back and relook at the last 6 years. You said you were branded as an extreme righty. Is it fair to say that you were rebranded? I mean, I covered a little bit of your 2012 successful run to the executive mansion. You were largely had been branded, maybe it was a self-branding, as a moderate Republican at that point. Is it, maybe this is semantics, but you were rebranded effectively, weren't you? Fair or
yes.
Unfair? Okay.
Yes, I guess I was rebranded from, and yet my political viewpoints haven't changed since I was a city councilman in 1988 in Charlotte, North Carolina. My political viewpoints have been fairly consistent. But, you know, I'm not going to play the victim card. I know it's a hardball game, and it's hardball politics at this point in time.
Tell me a little bit about your media consumption. What do you read, listen, if you do listen, and watch on a regular basis?
Well, I read as much as I can. I read the Wall Street Journal. I read USA Today. I read the Internet and Time Magazine. I read the Huffington Post and Drudge. I like to read what both the left and right are saying on issues, and not just the popular issues, but I like to read about foreign policy. I like to read about healthcare, infrastructure, because those are the areas that I have a passion about still, and how we're going to resolve these complex issues for decades to come. So I'm a huge reader. And then I also have my own radio show now in Charlotte, and I have to be sure not to get tempted to just deal with the areas of conflict to draw listeners, but try to approach my radio show in a way where I'm giving both sides of the issues, and I'm telling people what the real game is. Because I've been in the game, I've played the game, and I've been played by the game, so I think I bring a unique voice right now in not being an elected official to be able to tell people what's really happened in Washington, what's really happened in Raleigh, and what's really happened in local government, business, and the culture wars that the media likes to talk about.
Let's talk about constitutional amendments. Before we do that, let me just remind listeners, if they don't know your voice, that this is Pat McCrory here on the WNC Politics podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Pat McCrory NC. That is on Twitter. And you have been an outspoken critic against two of the six constitutional amendments. I know that's an important distinction because you are in support of voter ID as one example. I imagine that you're in support of the lowering of the maximum tax threshold for the state income tax. But of these six constitutional amendments, I want to, I guess, at least start with the two that deal with separation of power or removing some of the executive powers. You're opposed to these two. One deals with judicial vacancies. Right now, I think it's been this way for about a century. Judicial vacancies, when they come up, judges, of course, run in our state. But when a vacancy occurs, the governor would appoint somebody to fill that vacancy. The legislature has put forth a proposed constitutional amendment that would give that power back to the legislature. And then there's another constitutional amendment that deals with the Board of Ethics and Elections, which is currently a 9-member board. And this is tied up in legal wranglings and challenges, but this, in effect, as I understand it, would move where we're at from a 9-member board to an 8-member board, even though the current 9-member board, I believe, earlier this week was ruled illegal by a 3-judge panel. So with that as a kind of a rambling context, tell me about these constitutional amendments that you were opposed to and why.
Well, I've stepped on the toes of both the right and the left
since
I've left office, and I did it actually when I was governor. Most people forget that when I was governor of North Carolina, I sued the Republican legislature, Phil Berger and, at the time, Tom Tillis, for a power grab where they attempted to take power away from the executive branch. And, in fact, I then asked Jim Hunt and Jim Martin to join me in defending the executive branch of government, not just for me but for future governors of North Carolina. And the state Supreme Court ruled in my favor in McCrory versus Berger, and it was a major case that has major future ramifications of protecting separation of powers and the powers of the governor. So after I left the governor's office, the legislature put a constitutional amendment on the ballot, which basically would overturn McCrory versus Berger. And even though I'm not governor anymore, I would be a total hypocrite if I didn't fight the same cause and protect the power of Governor Cooper and all future governors. And so when I read about this constitutional amendment and saw the Republican legislature pass it, I immediately called Jim Martin up, one of my previous governors, predecessors, and said, Jim, we got to do something about this. This is bad government. Even though it's our Republicans doing it, it's not good for the future of our state. Jim then proceeded to call Jim Hunt, who proceeded to call Beverly, and who's proceeded to call Mike Easley, and we all got together and agreed that this was not good for the future of North Carolina and separation of powers. And I'm proud to have joined my fellow Republican Democratic predecessors and helped initiate that effort to fight these two constitutional amendments. We've already had success where the legislature, due to our input, watered down some of the more radical changes that they were making and taking away power from the governor's office, but it's still wrong. There are still two amendments regarding appointing judges and the elections board, which I don't think is good for long-term government in North Carolina, and I'm going to vote against those two amendments, and I'm going to be joining my fellow Democratic and Republican board governors in campaigning against them while supporting voter ID, which I think is common sense, and supporting victims' rights, which I've been fighting for since I was a city council member at the age of 32, and also supporting capping the income tax. It's not actually lowering the income tax. It's capping the income tax at a higher level than it is actually now. I don't think that's I think that's a good financial move for the future economic development of North Carolina.
And I apologize if I misspoke on lowering, or it would lower the cap. But of course, the current income rate here in the state of North Carolina is
there actually 5.499. Not a cap at this point in time.
I believe there's a 10% cap. I think.
Oh, is there a 10%?
I believe there is. Yeah, I believe there's a 10%. And this would lower it to 7. Yeah.
You're educating me then. I apologize.
It's okay.
So the cap right now is much higher than the income tax that we have right now that I helped initiate as governor during my 4-year tenure.
So voting up on two. Down on two, up on four of them.
Yeah, and what's confusing and where I think the legislature screwed up was they didn't even number the amendments, which is now that I'm opposed to two of the amendments, sadly, the Democratic Party is doing a TV ad with my picture on it, run by a guy named Weisel, who used to be one of my biggest critics and often tried to sue me while I was governor. And now he's using me to try to defeat all the amendments, which I call the Republican legislature out for being deceitful in these two amendments, and I'm now calling out the Democratic Party for being deceitful and using my picture and Governor Martin's picture in TV ads, making it look like we're against all six amendments, which we're not. But the two amendments, me along with Governor Perdue, Easley, Hunt, and Martin are definitely still voting against them and working against two of the amendments. And I'm proud of that bipartisan support. And that's the type of politician I've been all my life.
Since the current state constitution was ratified in the 1970s, I believe there have been 45 proposed amendments to the Constitution. 38 of them have gone through. Do you ultimately expect all six of these to pass?
I expect the four to pass. I expect the two to be close, but the chances of them passing, I think, are still pretty high based upon the wording. And I think there'll be a large drop-off of people not voting for any of the constitutional amendments because it's a pretty long ballot and there's total confusion. I think changing the Constitution should be a much more serious thing and go through a much more serious process than our legislature put it through at this point in time. But at least two of the amendments, victims' rights and the voter ID, has been an issue that's been debated for years in North Carolina, and I think those were the two amendments that were most appropriate to put on the ballot. The others, fishing and hunting, I think it's more of a political game. I'll probably vote for it, but it's not needed.
Governor Pat McCrory is on the line. A number of things I want to ask you, but trying to be respectful of your time, I'm going to just breeze through some of them pretty quickly here. You spend as long or as short as you would like on these questions. Where will you spend election night in just a couple of weeks?
Probably my home. Although I might be doing some radio on my own radio show on WBT 1110 in Charlotte. Too. I might be doing some analysis of the election results. Or I've also done some Meet the Press. They occasionally have me on and some cable TV. Chuck Todd is on my radio show every Friday, which irritates all my conservative listeners. But Chuck has also had me on Meet the Press several times. And he moderated the debate between myself and Roy Cooper in one of our debates. And so I try to have a voice on the national scene because, again, I've been very active as a local politician and a statewide politician in the ninth largest state in the United States of America.
See, I made a mistake there before our last question. I said you can be as short as you want or as long as you want. I know better than to tell a former elected leader they can go on as long as they want. That could be problematic. Yeah. So quick follow-up. You and Chuck Todd, I remember that debate. Do you guys have each other's cell phone numbers? Do you guys text each other?
Yeah, occasionally. I text them some pretty strong feedback, and I at times I think they're pretty biased, more toward the left on NBC, and I like to see both sides being presented their viewpoint. I actually like to watch the PBS NewsHour, which has civil discussions on both sides during that hour-long broadcast every evening. That's probably my favorite TV news shows to give us a clear, concise, more complex overview of complex issues that our president and Congress and nation are dealing with.
That's a television program that I've appeared on. Shameless plug. One race or referendum elsewhere in the country that you're tracking?
Well, here in North Carolina, I think North Carolina is an interesting race between McCready and Harris. McCready, who's playing up as Marine, he sounds more conservative than I am. And yet he's running as a Democrat against Harris, who's a former First Baptist minister here in Charlotte. And I think that's a very interesting race where McCready is running as far away from Nancy Pelosi as he can, while Harris is trying to tie him to Nancy Pelosi and the National Democrats. I think that's a very interesting race in North Carolina. At the national level, a race that I think is not being talked about, and that is a good friend of mine, Scott Walker, the two-term governor of Wisconsin, who I think has done a wonderful job. He's had to actually run for governor three times because there was a recall, and now he's favored to lose the state of Wisconsin. And I think that's a very interesting race, considering that Scott just ran for president not too long ago. So I think the other interesting race is the Senate race in Texas, which is now getting a lot of publicity. So that'll be a very interesting statewide governor's race and a Senate race, which will kind of see where our nation's going in the next several years.
Ted Cruz and Beto O'Rourke. I believe that the folks at 538.
Yeah, he's the current U.S. Congress.
Right, and I think the folks at 538 have pegged that at about a 2-to-1 chance of Cruz defending the seat that he currently holds. Democrats will end one, both, or neither of the supermajorities here at the General Assembly come November 6th?
I would at least say they end the supermajority in the House. That would be my prediction. But I hate making predictions. Heck, I thought election night, I was with Donald Trump the night before the election, and I thought it'd be the last time I ever would see him. And he'd be going back to New York and I'd be going back to Raleigh. So who am I to predict right?
Yeah, yeah. But this is what we do.
I think the House will lose supermajority, which means Governor Cooper's probably going to have to start taking some stands on some issues, which he's kind of avoided in many cases, of having to be much more specific on his budget and much more specific on certain policy items that will, on health care, on criminal justice, on the budget itself, on tax cuts. So it's going to be an interesting next 4 years or next 2 years if there is not a supermajority in the House in the state. That means they're going to have to figure out how to cooperate.
Governor, you're dovetailing.
It'll be very interesting dynamics.
You're dovetailing wonderfully into my next question. Will Medicaid be approved by one, both, or neither of the chambers in 2019 here at the GA?
I think it's much more complex than a yes or no. I think it's how it's designed and whether or not waivers will be given. I was actually looking. I tried to negotiate with the Obama administration, and I met with President Obama in the Oval Office for an hour trying to negotiate Medicaid expansion for North Carolina, but he refused to give us any waivers whatsoever. He did not think he needed to negotiate at that point in time. And I spent a lot of time with his administration looking at potential Medicaid expansion, but I needed waivers, especially to have some work requirement for able-bodied people who can work and should work. And President Obama would not give me that waiver. So these are waivers that other governors are since getting from the new administration. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic in the future.
True or false, Pat McCrory will run for governor in 2020?
I don't know, and I'm not even close to making that decision. I'm in no rush to make that decision either. I have no idea, and I'm not playing politics with you. It took me a year to recover from the last campaign, and I'm trying to decide where I can make a positive difference for our state and our nation in the future and what role I want to play and have a choice in playing. In the meantime, I'm trying to be relevant and trying to educate our public on the complexities of many of the issues that we have to deal with today, including our unfunded liabilities right here in state government. I'm real proud of Dale Falwell, who I think is the one guy in Raleigh who's actually confronting issues that need to be confronted regarding over a $30 to $50 billion unfunded liabilities on the books in North Carolina, which could have major ramifications for the next generation. And Dale Falwell, our treasurer, is one of the few politicians in either party who's willing to talk about these complex issues that no one else wants to confront. And I'm very proud of him. He did that when he was head of my unemployment. When I came into office, we had a $2.6 billion deficit in unemployment in North Carolina, and not only did Dale help lead the charge in my administration in eliminating that $2.6 billion deficit, but now we have a $2 billion surplus in that area, and Governor Cooper's and others will benefit from that surplus, and also the Rainy Day Reserve Fund, which we held for future disasters in North Carolina. We had no Rainy Day Fund when I came in as governor. And now we have hundreds of millions of dollars in that rainy day fund, and I'm proud I did that. That's one of my proudest things I did as governor, which at the time Attorney General Roy Cooper criticized me for, but thank God we have it for Hurricane Matthew and Hurricane Florence now.
I'll end with a quick unrelated to political one. What's your favorite golf course?
My favorite golf course?
Yeah, that you've played. You're a golfer, right?
I love golf. I'm not good at it, though. I love the serenity of golf. Hey, my favorite golf course.
That you've played.
That I've played. Well, my favorite out-of-state golf course is Augusta. I had the honor to play Augusta, and the history of Augusta is amazing. But North Carolina, I love the mountain golf courses. Probably Grandfather Mountain is a wonderful golf course. I like Sedgefield Golf Course in Greensboro because I grew up right around it, and it's where the old Greater Greensboro Open was and where Sam Snead won many tournaments, and it's an old Donald Ross course. So Sedgefield's probably my other favorite course in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Where some PGA events, I believe the Wyndham has taken place in recent years.
The Wyndham took place, and I was honored to play in the Pro-Am this past year. And the pro that I played with shot a 59 in the next day. So I showed him how not to swing the golf club, and he did real well the next day.
He is he's a native of Ohio, if I remember it correctly, but he grew up in Jamestown, North Carolina, in Guilford County.
I was born 62 years ago yesterday.
Hey, happy birthday. I did not realize that.
I moved to North Carolina when I was 9 years old to Jamestown. And I'm honored to call North Carolina home, and I plan to always call North Carolina home. It's the best state in the United States of America, and hopefully I've had a positive impact in one small way making that happen, along with many other people, including my predecessors as governors. And I'm glad to work with them and be friends with all of them.
Well, happy belated birthday, and Governor Pat McCrory, 74th governor of North Carolina. Thank you for coming on the WNC Politics Podcast.
Thank you very much. Take care now.
And as always, thank you for downloading, clicking play, and staying informed with what is happening in North Carolina politics. You can follow me on Twitter at J_TIBS. Follow the governor at Pat McCrory NC. You can also stay up to date as to what is going on and some of the context with those constitutional amendments. Also some interesting congressional races and legislative races. Read about those, listen to some stories about those at our website, wunc.org. For Governor Pat McCrory, I'm Jeff Tiberi. We'll talk to you again soon.